not my first time in Cope. I always enjoy it. It's a great honour being asked to read here, and it's a delight in particular to be in Avail. This fantastic community and the energy in this room. I've been taking notes, you know. I'd like to do something like this back in Leeds. It's a wonderful institution altogether. I should say, when we talk about all of these prizes that I get shortlisted for, I never actually win any. This is kind of a theme of my reading, really, sort of failure and incompetence. And although my family, I was the eighth child, my elder brothers and sisters were taught through the medium of Irish. My father was in the Irish Army. And there was a big gap between them and me. Because like being in the Irish Army was an acceptable form of contraception at the time, you know. And I was the first one born in England. If they didn't want us to understand what they were saying, they would speak Irish, so have to vomit their own kind of a thing. Some people might have grown up bilingual under these circumstances. I really grew up paranoid. Took myself off to the Gaelic League, attempted to learn, failed, bad woman, blamed my tool, Deneen's Dictionary, which does sometimes record words rather as you thought they should be used than they were by people. So really, this went into what is generally regarded as the most unsuccessful love triumph since the Second World War, from the Irish. According to Deneen, a Gael unsurpassed in lexicographical enterprise, the Irish, for moon, means the white circle in a slice of half-boiled potato or turnip. A star is the mark on the forehead of a beast, and the sun is the bottom of a lake, or well. Well, if I say to you, your face is like a slice of half-boiled turnip, your hair is the colour of a lake's bottom, and at the centre of each of your eyes is the mark of the beast, it is because I want to love you properly, according to Deneen. Not that long ago, my failure really in performance terms, I gave a reading that was probably the least enjoyed preparatory reading since those that Nero used to give in ancient Rome. But Suetonius records that people would pretend to die so their body could be carried out of the meeting. And I was fundraising for this charity, it was briefly mentioned. But the person I was reading with had been a very prominent figure in the National Front. The people didn't seem to know that he changed his views. And where we were reading was in an area with the greatest concentration of BNP membership of anywhere else in the country. BNP is the nationalist group. I read this, which went down extremely badly, out of a sense of perversion. It's called Fundamentals. When I was at school, they used to talk about Livingstone, still a kind of a hero, and I got the impression that when he went to Africa, whole nations flocked to the cross. But this was not the case. In all his time in Africa, he only made one convert, and he lapsed. Livingstone blamed the language, blamed all sorts of things, not the inherent unattractive nature of Christianity, but he said the difficulties getting some of the concepts across, and some of the words in his notebooks I've used for this poem. Fundamentals. Brethren, I know that many of you have come here today because your chief has promised any non-attender that he will stake him out, drive tent pegs through his anus, and sell his wives and children to the Portuguese. As far as possible, I want you to put that from your minds. Today, I want to talk to you about the Christian God. In many respects, our Christian God is not like your God. His name, for example, is not also our word for rain. Neither does it have for us the connotation sexual intercourse. And although I call him holy, you call him, not it, even though we know he is not a man, and certainly not a woman, I do not mean, as you do, that he is fat like a healthy cow. Let me make this clear. When I say God is good, God is everywhere, it is not because he is exceptionally fat. God loves you does not mean what warriors do to spear carriers on campaign. It means he feels for you like your mother or your father. Yes, I know Father Ryan loved the son he bought, like warriors love spear carriers on campaign. That's sin. And it comes later. From today, I want you to remember just three simple things. Our God is different from your God. Our God is better than your God. And my wife doesn't like it when you watch her go to the toilet. Grasp them, and you could grasp the fundamentals of salvation. Baptism starts at sundown, but before then, as arranged, how to strip, clean, and recite a breech-loading martini. Amen. This is a while ago. I thought I'll move away from the intimate kind of coteries of modern poetry to the stadium audiences I imagined to be commanded by early 14th century unperformed French musical satire and accepted a commission to update the Roman de Fauvel. It's a fascinating cycle of songs, but it does contain the first written down charivari in European music, and there is indeed pictures of the rare occasion when the lout has listened to. And this is my reworking of it, charivari. Derived from chav, we call this charivari. Rough music from us roughnecks plus a skit. Our instruments aren't made by Stradivari. They're anything that we can reach to hit. The drum to Ambrose meant eternal death, but that's exactly why we like it most. Enjoy your wealth until your dying breath, for then you'll spend eternity as toast. Jerome thought sinful music sounds so good, the pious kind should strike one's ear as raw. So if we sound less polished than we should, it's just because we take Jerome as law. Shaw's hell was full of amateur musicians. We're worse than amateur, yet we're up here to give the lie to art and its beauticians for one day of the calendar each year. The music that the Antichrist would play is beautiful beyond our power to tell. And Paganini took our breath away as Lucifer his soul away to hell. You've heard that truth is beauty, beauty truth, like one was Kester and the other Pollux. Forgive the language of uncultured youth, but Cockney Keats was talking hamster bollocks. Because the beautiful can prove untrue, you sometimes need to heed Tom, Dick and Harry. We're here to drum that message into you. And that's the meaning of the Cherry Valley. I like people, this is a strange request, but if I like people to clap at the end, because if they only like one poem and they have to save that to the end, it sounds like it's gone down an absolute storm. place where I went, my reading went down so badly, it wasn't a working class area, it's a white flight area on the edge of Leeds. Leeds is, since the Brexit vote, all northern cities have been castigated as racist, because Brexit basically was a cover for racism. One of our local MPs was stabbed to death by someone screaming Britain first, was there? And when Olawale was killed, for a long time nobody said anything about it, but there was chants which kept his name alive in the football grounds. And one of them was, went to Michael, rowed the boat ashore, the river air is chilly and deep, never trust the Leeds police. This one ends with a slightly different version of another one of the songs. And the Irish connection here is important, because he wouldn't have been, what they did to the torture that they inflicted on Olawale, none of that would have been revealed were it not for the fact that there was a second generation Irish cadet called Gary Galvin, who I think, because his Catholicism wasn't allowed to join the Masons, otherwise none of this would have come out. This is in memory, really, of Olawale, via negativa. Not circumcellion, beggar, gyre of aid, but Lagos Christian college boy. Not Abbey lover, but job seeker. Not city of God, but motorway city. Not office career, but casual labour. Not union member, but last in, first out. Not my father's mansion, but chapel town slum. Not welcome brother, but rent up front. that empire pilgrimages into vagrants, that ambulare pro deo but wandering abroad, not Ave Maria but black Mariah, not demonic visions but brain damage, not church Latin but medical Latin, not catechism but questionnaires, not Pentecost tongues but echolalia, not the not the African fathers but the African mind, not divine spark but ECC, not cloud of unknowing but largactyl fog, not confessional boxes but cardboard boxes, not the body of Christ at Holy Communion but the cold host of a Leeds moon, not via negativa but fugue state, not river of life but rivers of blood, not rosary beads but bubbles of air, not fisher of men but fish from a weir, not heavenly throne but a pauper's grave, not heavenly choir but football chant, and you shouldn't trust the cuppa if your name's Olawale and you can't find your way home.
Yes.
In my new book, it was nearly going to be called Ashtray Land. There's a book called Urban Brinch on the Shed Group. It's about a group of disaffected young people in need who dropped out of society. There's a lot of them in different cities, out of education, out of training, and they survived by shoplifting, hence the list of items in the beginning, their clothes. It's really built around one of them called Skeeter, is a bit of a poet, and the kind of the poem comes together around the quote from Skeeter. Ashtray Land is what he calls, is what they call England. It means nothing to them, this distant place, or this one little culture which is so important, it means nothing to them. And in a way, this parallels an MP, Mark Garnier. This is, I'm just checking notes. I live in the north, and the he talked about jogging constituencies, jogging voters, not even constituencies. It's we are the joggings in the outlying regions of Britain with whom the party need not concern itself. And this is the Blue Queen of Ashtray Land, and it has my favourite epigraph about the Grail. It's got to be said, there's so many ways of giving the Grail question, but this was my favourite Grail question, which was, what the fuck's the Holy Grail? The hair glows burnished as the gold that trims a Nike cardigan, Ionian white to feel our trainers, DKN white jeans and cap. Her skin's as blue as old skim milk, as blue the star on her left cheek, a boastful beauty spot tattooed with broken glass and laundry ink. The downer's down, the brown all tooted, the homegrown hydroponic skunk all shotgun, blown back jointed bomb. The queen calls for her royal swan. Through snakebite piercings on her lips, the bitten red adapter hissed like Cleopatra's asp, its gas. Our queen jerks upright, claps her hands, with no round table they hand round, white lightning in 2 litre flasks. She necks a draft and kicks a minstrel, Skeeter fools the block with song. Bring me my deep of burning gold, bring me Viagra of desire, bring me my foil, oak clouds unfurled, bring me my milligrams of fire. And I to take off to rob a dealer, Urban's passed out on his crate, peeling back a cardboard curtain, their queen looks down on her estate. Leeds kind of destroyed itself in the 70s, wanting to be the most racist in the 70s, not down lots, but a wonderful kind of side benefit for the city was the Irish who built the road, along those many of them came and settled in Leeds, and one of them was Duraco behind, one of the great Shandow singers of his generation. And it's not just me who says that Kieran Carson and Sean O'Reilly used him a lot. But this is Roisin, born obviously White Rose for Yorkshire. The M1 laid, they laid us off. We stayed where it ran out in Leeds, a White Rose town in Lovers Roads. Its skin is smooth, its locals rough. Some nights we drink in Chapel Town, a place not known for Gweledors, to hear our Cahoin sing Shandos, or Rida gave him the crown. Though most were lost by Roisin Dubh, all knew his art was rich and strange, and a pub we drown in our own black stuff as we lay the sheep's gar into change. Pogs bookshelf asphalt stick to roads and cuts down traffic sound as well. Between the lines and navvy reads, black seas of words that did not sell. That's true about using pog books on the motorways. I think that's more mind bending. This is the Lammas Hireling, which I had the great pleasure of working with Paul on to make a film. And it was a story that was told to me in Island McGee in the north, which had the oldest witchcraft tradition of anywhere else. It also had the only mass witchcraft trial. And a local person told me this story, it all filtered into this. And it was the idea, I suppose, of biting off more than you can chew. He's a farmer whose his attitude to nature is very different. He starts obsessed with money and silent. He ends the poem destroying money compulsively and speaking compulsively. When I talk about casting ball, I'm not talking about reading a ball, it's making bullets, melting things down to make bullets. After the fair, I'd still a light heart and a heavy purse, his strokes are cheap, and cattle doted on him. In his time, mine only dropped heifers, fat as cream. Yields doubled. I grew fond of company that knew when to shut up. Then, one night, disturbed from dreams of my dear late wife, I hunted down her torn voice to his pale form, stock still in the light from the dark lantern, stark naked, but for the fox trap biting his ankle, I knew him a warlock, a cow with leather horns. To go into the hair gets you muckle sorrow, the wisdom runs, muckle care. I levelled and blew the small hour through his heart. The moon came out. By its yellow witness, I saw him fur over like a stone blossom. His lovely head thinned, his top lip gathered, his eyes rose like bread. I carried him in a sack that grew lighter at every step and dropped him from a bridge. There was no splash. Now I heard elf shot. I don't dream, but spend my nights casting ball from half crowns and my days here. Bless me, Father, I have sinned. This has been an hour since my last confession. This is, I've been working recently a lot with therapists. The original plan was working with therapists who had clients that were suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, refugees, but, and it's ongoing. But this really is about a different kind of refugee. This is the love of Kafka's life. And she was a refugee from both Hitler and Stalin, ended up in London, and she tells this story. And this became kind of a part of that narrative. It's too pretty. It's when I say it's a poem, it's kind of like prose poem. And it's how you tell stories is very important in therapy, how they get told, narrative exposure, therapeutic approaches are named after it. So this is half the story. Franz Kafka, the story goes, encountered a little girl in the park where he walked regularly. She was crying. She'd lost her doll. Kafka helped the girl search for the doll, but they couldn't find it. They arranged to meet there the next day to look again for her doll, but still they couldn't find it. When they met for the third time, Kafka gave her a tiny letter that he told her he'd found nearby. She read, "Don't be sad, I'm only travelling. I'll write, I promise." And every day that summer, when Kafka and the little girl met, he'd read a new letter to her, describing places the doll visited, what it did there and who it met. The little girl was comforted. When the holiday was over and she had to go back to school, he gave her a doll that he said was the lost prodigal returned. And, if it seemed a little different to the doll of her memory, a note pinned to its scarf explained, "My travels changed me." Also ends this version of the story, popular with therapists. But in Dora Diamond's own account, our one first-hand source, there was no new doll, no message of change or growth. Instead, Dora had described a final letter sent to the little girl, detailing how the doll had met its soulmate and had married him, how it would be too busy with its new family to write again, enjoining the little girl to seek similar fulfillment in her own life. Dora also noted how this affair had driven Kafka to distraction, who'd endured white nights, tortured by his own compassion, feverishly thinking up new adventures for his changeling doll made out of letters and lines and love. How this correspondence had been maintained in this fashion for a period of 3 weeks, as long as that holiday when Jorah Diamonds had first met France, a place with a name I only half recall now, Graal something. And my new book is called The Blind Road Maker, because I was amazed to discover that the man who made the road in the town from where I live in Leeds and also about on the other side, would have been blind from the age of 6. Fantastically dynamic individual. Young blind people in those days would learn, if they were blind children, they would learn by feeling headstones, because it was cutting, they would get numbers and letters. But he was a fiddler, he was a horse trader. My favourite story about him was that he was hired to play the fiddle at a wedding, and he ran off with the bride-to-be. Massive scandals, you can imagine. A long time before things settled down. But when they interviewed the woman who went, she said, why did you go off as a blind fiddler? And she said, he was more full of life than any man I ever met. And this is what he feels like. And I suppose the thing about the new words, I heard that from a man who lived locally, he told me the story, how he tested the stones. Anyway. Colourful Jack, blind Jack, would see right through me. Colourless beside his many coats and trades, technicolour escapades my dull ink must betray. A froggy lover like those he saw off of Culloden, he'd scorn me stumbling comme sur les pavés. How I used that line from Baudelaire as a crutch. My fiddle with words while his own played tunes Jack only had to hear once to know backwards. He played to lead the Yorkshire Blues into battle. Women fell for him too, even later on in life when Jack always stunk of pitch like old Nick. He could sweet talk all right to get somewhere. Testing stones to beg his road's black tongues, I heard how Jack rolled them around in his mouth like new words. But I wouldn't know about that. This is called The White Page. This is my second last. I'm told you should only give people 2 5 more, and only 2 to go, not long, nearly over the finish line. This is when I did this project with Tristram Shandy, and at the centre of Tristram Shandy is the love affair of Toby and the widow Rodman. The widow Rodman is interested, but he's been wounded in the upper thigh, and she doesn't know what that means, you know. And she spends the whole book trying to find out what it happened. And finally he says to her, would you like to see where I was injured? And she says, for decorum's sake, she has to have a bit of a think about it. And after a while she says, yes, actually, he knows I'm a widow. I've been around the block a few times. She says, yes, I would like to see where you were injured, Toby. He gets out his mat. He says, Siege of Namor, we're attacking the sound. That kind of, the whole book is like that. And when he describes how beautiful she is, he says, my description of beauty will disappoint you. You have your own ideas of beauty. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to leave a blank page and you fill in what you think is the description of the most beautiful woman. There's an exhibition of poems about this and artworks going around at the moment. And this was my contribution, the white page, with an epigraph from Jean Cocteau. Poets don't draw. They unravel their handwriting and then tie it up again, but differently. If you stretch out this writing into one long, thin, single line, draw it to an invisible thread, you can make its information your own material, giving you the whip hand over this verse, this universe. Then, with a flick of your wrist, it will ripple into a silhouette of your own fancy. A portrait of Widow Rodman left blank in Tristram Shandy by Stern for your realisation in Sixu's ink. Or like letters, Molly Bloom sends herself with love's blind signature. And this poem that I'm finishing with, Square Ring, is another example of embarrassing bad reactions from certain elements of the audience. And it's about my fact-finding brother. Although he was a great hurler, he would have been able to play for Tick, I understand, were it not for the fact that my family emigrated. He boxed, he boxed in the Navy. He was a decent enough boxer. Because I wrote this poem about him a while ago, and Billy Ramsell is in the room at the moment, and one of his poems that I really covered is his Lament for Christie Ring. About 4 or 5 years ago, the Poetry Society were collecting poems about sport, and that was my, I nominated that poem, you know. And I was reading a review, I think in the Irish Times, of an anthology of poems, and that was in there, and I was very pleased to read that, you know. And it was a generally positive review of all of the poems in it, but for an example of bad sports writing, although I wasn't in it, she chose this poem. And so I'm going to read this poem out of a certain sense of perversity. The thing that she particularly didn't like was a comment by, and I quoted a New York boxing, if anybody knows Jerry Eisenberg, very old style New York Jewish, a very funny bloke, and his description, I quoted it, this is something that she particularly disliked. Tom was a great hurler, as I said, but when he joined the Navy for a short period, they said to him, would you like to try and play hockey? I said, okay. And of course in hockey you're not supposed to raise the stick above the shoulder and hurling, obviously, you know, so Tom forgets, the ball comes, gives him almighty whack, hits an officer in the middle of his face, puts him in hospital. Anyway, he was a decent boxer. I'm not going to pretend he wasn't racist, but he admired black boxers, in particular Dick Tiger, who was an extraordinary fighter. And in a way, he took the edges off his racism by meeting black people and fighting them. I know that sounds paradoxical. Squaring. A 60s man thing. Dad, ours, circling to bond as hard as Ingemar Johansson's glue in the ad around our huge box. Its screen a snow globe of American static. The night Johansson won, a commentator summarized Floyd Patterson. The feet of a ballet dancer, the chin of a poet. Floyd knocked out Ingemar in their rematch. His brilliant smile shone through their glass jaw. Later, I learned out outside ring light, boxing was darkened by money. Abroad, Henry Cooper said he needed to knock out locals for a draw. Some Yanks dived so as not to swim in concrete boxing boots. My poet's foot is in my mouth now, Tom, middleweight champion of the Royal Navy. But I remember Freddie Mills staring down a rifle in the back of that car on his soul's darkest night. You might count it with Dick Tiger, Borny Hetu, burning bright despite suffering the black light. Those galaxies only battered fighters can explore. Generous, Dick gave away age, weight or height, but never heart. Slipping cannibal taunts to win. Biafran civil warrior later, yet a hero to both sides. Another trick of boxing. It can also make more love. Square that ring, poet. Brother, raise your hands. Thank you for the word.